Blog Talk Radio.
Synagogues and altars that rise in profusion to embrace all the religions of the world.
Indivisible.
A land forged by the hot steel and raw courage, conformed forever by the awful crucible of civil war.
With liberty.
Her man, in pursuit of an honest life, will not be denied his chance. Where her citizens move freely within her vast borders without hindrance or fear, a land brimming with opportunity, where freedom of choice is the guideline for all. The courts of our land are open to all. Its wheels of justice grind for all causes, all people. They look to every avenue for justice, every concern of the law, and they temper their reasoning with mercy for all.
In
liberating strife. Who more than self their country loved and mercy more than life, America. Something like this. Oh, beautiful, broad, spacious skies, forever waves of grace. Shine and see, oh Lord.
has sounded for the trumpets that shall never sound retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer, and be jubilant, my feet.
His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching on.
In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. As he died to make men holy, let us live to make men free.
On a holiday known as the 4th of July and or Independence Day. July 4th has been a federal holiday in the United States since 1941. Bet you guys didn't know that. But the tradition of Independence Day celebrations go back to the 18th century during the American Revolutionary War. The American Revolution was fought from 1775 to 1783. You didn't know this was going to be a history lesson, did you? The 4th of July has been celebrated as the birth of the American independence. Sometimes in looking at the news and listening to talk shows, we can highlight the negative. We all have things that we think of as important and sacred, but sometimes we forget the power of counting our blessings. We encourage you this holiday to stop and think what it means to be an American. For most of us, the 4th of July is a paid holiday where we can spend time with our family and watch fireworks. But remember, that price of blood by a brave people is what earned us the right that we enjoy today. We look forward to hearing your comments on the topic. Just push 1 on your phone, and you'll be acknowledged by the last 4 digits of your phone number when we put you on the air. And now we'll be hearing from Wild Bill.
Well, hello, Starla. Hello to everyone out there in Blog Talk Radio Land. We want to thank you for taking your time to listen to our show. Whether you're listening live or in the archives, with the holiday coming up, I'm sure that most people are traveling, and so they'll catch our show in the archives. And so I just want to say thank you again for taking your time to be part of our show, to listen, to post comments, I can't tell you what it means to see all the feedback that we get from our shows. In looking at the 4th of July, our Independence Day, there was a couple of things we did. We got a little short history we're going to bring you on it. It's amazing the things that you think you know that you don't know, how that actually that it was voted on or agreed upon on July 2nd, but they had to get the copies all printed up, and it was actually signed on July 4th, and how it was actually celebrated that first year on July 8th. I wasn't aware of that. I also didn't realize that in July 4th of 1776 that the war for our freedom for this country was not finished. It was just part of the process of what was going on. I think the war actually went on until 1783. So, poor Wild Bill, he had to kind of rub his head. He's looking through some of the history on the 4th of July. But one of the things I was looking at here, and we've talked many times about the power of counting your blessings, and looking at what it means to be an American, I was trying to find something of balance to share, because we are all people of personal opinion, and all of us have different perspectives. That we have a generational perspective difference. You know, for me, I can look and I can see things that have changed in America since I've been on this earth. But then for someone that is, say, just now a teenager, maybe in their early 20s, this is now. This is their reality starts with now. Everything else has to do with a story in a book. It has to be something that's someone's perspective they're teaching us about, but it's not our reality. A couple of memories I had from when I was young was there was a person who had been Attorney General of the state of Arkansas, was running for governor. I remember my mom was all for this person because he had actually went in and was cleaning up the nursing home industry in the state of Arkansas. And so I sort of remember that. But other than that, politics, what was going on, current affairs, it didn't matter to me at all. I was all about my next cartoon, the next time I could play football or something with my friends. That's what it was all about. And to my mom, it was real important to see that there was a politician who was actually caring about what was going on in our nursing homes. And so in thinking about perspectives and thinking about the right and wrong, I got to thinking, okay, how can we address this? How can we look at this and trying to look at America? And the point is, there's so many different perspectives that we can't. I can tell you my thoughts on it. I can tell you my perspectives. But that's strictly my thoughts and perspectives. It's not something that's going to reach everyone that listens to this show. So what I've done, I've put together some clips. Ronald Reagan, I have a Independence Day speech from him in 1986. I also have one from President Obama from 2012. And in looking at, even there with our current president, I can remember thinking in my lifetime I would never see a black man as president. Now, I'm not a prejudiced person. That's not meant to be prejudicial in any way. I'm not saying I never thought a black person would be qualified. I just thought that so many other people, their prejudice and thoughts on this, that it would never happen. Of course, in this one instance here, we had terrible things going on with our economy. It was clear that the Democrats were going to have a huge voting lead as far as people wanting to vote for change in this country, and our two choices was a black man and a woman. And so we had a perspective of other people thinking that, you know, would we ever have a woman president in this country? And so that was sort of one of the things that kind of weighed out through the whole thing. We're also very aware, you know, I grew up in a time as a teenager when the Vietnam War was going on. So I knew some people that had friends and family that died in the Vietnam War, or conflict as they call it. I've seen the things that happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. I saw what happened in Iran when the hostages were taken. I was actually in the United States military during that time. And so all through my life, I've heard so many things where people talk pro something to do with our country and they talk negative about things to do with our country. Now, my generation at this time, of our perspective, seeing so much change, a lot of what you hear even at church, in social settings, news clips and things that really push our buttons, where they take a little sound bite and they can really fan it out there. For instance, I played, the people were saying where President Obama made a comment, we're no longer a Christian nation, and they played an excerpt of him saying that from the speech. I played his whole speech because I don't want sound bite mentality. I want to be able to speak with an educational hypothesis as to what I think it means, as to what they were saying, and how it applies to me. But in going back and looking at that, I could see how if you're all upset the way things are going, people were afraid, the economy is not real good, job market, unemployment is still not that well. You know, college people are graduating from school and having to get jobs in your 7-Eleven and thrift stores and things like that. Things have turned, I can't remember what the percentage was. I've heard of people that are going to college and they're working in fields that's not what they studied to be. It's a lesser field. They're overqualified for the jobs that they're doing. But look at the other part of that. In this country, I can take off and get into a car, and I can drive across state lines and go anywhere I want to go. I can shout from the top of my voice what I think is moral right and moral wrong. The technology is available in this country where I can do blog talk radio shows. I have cell phones that I can use that I can share with people and express myself as to what it is. I have freedom of religion. I can go to any church in this country that I want to, whether it be Christian, Catholic, Muslim, Mormon, you know, Jehovah's Witness, whatever it is, I have those freedoms. I can still do that in this country. I have the right that I can take and go earn a living. I can take the income that I make. And yes, I have to pay taxes on that, but I can buy with it what I choose to buy. There's nothing regulating and saying you have to buy what we manufacture from the government. You have to buy this one car, or you have to buy this one type of food, or whatever it is. There's a lot of freedoms that we forget and we take advantage of. We have that freedom of speech that we can get up and say, I do not agree with what our politicians are doing. Or you can turn and say, I agree with what our politicians are doing. And we can sit up here and say, I just don't care. Or I don't understand. We have those freedoms to do that. So tonight, hope you enjoy the show. The songs at the beginning of that last one, the battle hymn of the Republic, I was amazed to find out that in the Civil War that both sides actually sang that song. It was actually originated in the North, but it became a song that was actually transcended whether you was fighting for the North and the South. That was amazing to me. To look at the wars and the blood that's been shed for this country, for the freedoms that we have and is still being fought and shed today. To know that we are a country that, because we have greater what we feel moral right and obligations to our brother in this country and freedoms, that we're willing to go to another country and guarantee freedoms for another people that's being oppressed and wants to have more, and they want to have a moral right where if there's genocide taking place, that our armed forces will go over there to defend the weaker of the people. Have we made mistakes? Sure. 2020's hindsight is a great thing. I wish I could turn around and say I've never had a mistake in my life. And Blog Talk Mom can tell you that I have, and Starla can tell you that I have. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've learned a lot from mistakes that I've made. It looks sometimes like in our country that we're not learning from our mistakes. But with that being said, like I say, I got a couple of presidential speeches. I have a contest a clip that I was going to bring about what it means to be an American. I found this thing that's on, it's a little short history of Independence Day, and I also have a clip that I'm bringing to you. It was a woman who did this for a contest about what it means to be an American. I thought it just has some really cutting edge truth to what it is. So anyway, Starla, I'm going to turn this back over to you, let you play this, but I really, really would love to hear your opinions.
Most American colonists were still loyal to King George up until the 1770s, but when England subjected her subjects to increased control over colonial affairs, it started a revolution. A five-man committee was appointed to draft the Declaration of Independence. This outlined the colony's desire for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. On sunny July 4th, the Congress approved the Declaration of Independence. The first July 4th celebration happened on July 8th, when the document was publicly read in Philadelphia. The crowd reacted with gunfire, bonfires, and fireworks. This custom was borrowed from England, of all places, which is how subjects rang in their king's birthday. Only in the colonies, they were celebrating the king's symbolic funeral. As King George sat safely on his throne in the summer of 76, his likeness in crudely fashioned dummies was burned in the colonies. In New York City, the equestrian statue of King George was hacked up and reportedly smelted into bullets for the revolution. One year later, citizens of Philadelphia honored Independence Day with fireworks, bonfires, and music. During the Revolutionary War, troops celebrated the Declaration's anniversary with double portions of rum. Actual bombs replaced the fireworks. After the colonies won their independence, cities across the U.S. relived the Revolution by participating in the July 4th revelries. Men commemorated the day by gathering in taverns to drink and argue over the new nation's leaders. It was a purely American custom to freely criticize the government. On the 50th anniversary, by eerie coincidence, both the Declaration's author and its editor, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, died July 4th, 1826. Eventually, Americans looked at Independence Day not so much as a day of rebellion, but as a day to appreciate the rights bestowed on them. In 1870, as America was healing from the Civil War and African Americans were freed from slavery, Independence Day became a recognized holiday. But if federal workers wanted to spend the day picnicking, they did it without pay. That changed in 1938 when Congress voted to make Independence Day a legal holiday. Since then, the holiday has been celebrated in good times and in bad, in war and in peace. American communities rally together, all because of that small act of bureaucracy in 1776 that started a free nation.
My fellow Americans, in a few moments, the celebration will begin here in New York Harbor. It's going to be quite a show. I was just looking over the preparations and thinking about a saying that we had back in Hollywood about never doing a scene with kids or animals, because they steal the scene every time. So you can rest assured, I wouldn't even think about trying to compete with a fireworks display, especially on the 4th of July. My remarks tonight will be brief, but it's worth remembering that all the celebration of this day is rooted in history. It's recorded that shortly after the Declaration of Independence was signed in Philadelphia, celebrations took place throughout the land, and many of the former colonists, they were just starting to call themselves Americans, set off cannons and marched in fife and drum parades. What a contrast with the sober scene that has taken place a short time earlier in Independence Hall. 56 men came forward to sign the parchment. It was noted at the time that they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honors. That was more than rhetoric. Each of those men knew the penalty for high treason to the crown. "We must all hang together," Benjamin Franklin said, "or assuredly we will all hang separately." And John Hancock, it is said, wrote his signature in large script so King George could see it without his spectacles. They were brave. They stayed brave through all the bloodshed of the coming years. Their courage created a nation built on a universal claim to human dignity, on the proposition that every man, woman, and child had a right to a future of freedom. For just a moment, let us listen to the words again. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Last night, when we rededicated Miss Liberty and relit her torch, we reflected on all the millions who came here in search of the dream of freedom, inaugurated in Independence Hall. We reflected, too, on their courage in coming great distances and settling in a foreign land and then passing on to their children and their children's children the hope symbolized in this statue here just behind us, the hope that is America. It is a hope that someday every people and every nation of the world will know the blessings of liberty. And it's the hope of millions all around the world. In the last few years, I've spoken at Westminster to the Mother of Parliaments, at Versailles, where French kings and world leaders have made war and peace. I've been to the Vatican in Rome, the Imperial Palace in Japan, and the ancient city of Beijing. I've seen the beaches of Normandy and stood again with those boys of Pointe-à-Pitre who long ago scaled the heights, and with, at that time, Lisa Zanetta Hen, who was at Omaha Beach for the father she loved, the father who had once dreamed of seeing again the place where he and so many brave others had landed on D-Day. But he had died before he could make that trip. And she made it for him. And Dad, she'd said, I'll always be proud. And I've seen the successors to these brave men. The young Americans in uniform all over the world. Young Americans like you here tonight. Man, the mighty USS Kennedy and the Iowa and the other ships of the line. I can assure you, you out there who are listening, that these young people are like their fathers and their grandfathers, just as willing, just as brave, and we can be just as proud. But our prayer tonight is that the call for their courage will never come, and that it's important for us too to be brave. Not so much the bravery of the battlefield. I mean the bravery of brotherhood. All through our history, our presidents and leaders have spoken of national unity and warned us that the real obstacle to moving forward the boundaries of freedom, the only permanent danger to the hope that is America, comes from within. It's easy enough to dismiss this as a kind of familiar exhortation. Yet the truth is that even two of our greatest founding fathers, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, once learned this lesson late in life. They'd worked so closely together in Philadelphia for independence. But once that was gained and a government was formed, something called partisan politics began to get in the way. After a bitter and divisive campaign, Jefferson defeated Adams for the presidency in 1800. And the night before Jefferson's inauguration, Adams slipped away to Boston, disappointed, brokenhearted, and bitter. For years, their estrangement lasted. But then, when both had retired, Jefferson at 68 to Monticello, and Adams at 76 to Quincy, they began through their letters to speak again to each other. Letters that discussed almost every conceivable subject, gardening, horseback riding, even sneezing as a cure for hiccups, but other subjects as well. The loss of loved ones, the mystery of grief and sorrow, the importance of religion, and of course, the last thoughts, the final hopes of two old men, two great patriarchs for the country that they had helped to found and loved so deeply. It carries me back, Jefferson wrote, about correspondence with his co-signer of the Declaration of Independence, to the times when, beset with difficulties and dangers, we were fellow laborers in the same cause, struggling for what is most valuable to man, his right to self-government, laboring always at the same oar, with some wave ever ahead threatening to overwhelm us and yet passing harmless, we rode through the storm with heart and hand. It was their last gift to us, this lesson in brotherhood, in tolerance for each other, this insight into America's strength as a nation. And when both died on the same day, within hours of each other, that date was July 4th, 50 years exactly after that first gift to us, the Declaration of Independence. My fellow Americans, it falls to us to keep faith with them and all the great Americans of our past. Believe me, if there's one impression I carry with me after the privilege of holding for 5.5 years the office held by Adams, Jefferson, and Lincoln, it is this, that the things that unite us, America's past of which we're so proud, our hopes and aspirations for the future of the world and this much-loved country, these things far outweigh what little divides us. So tonight, we are reaffirmed that Jew and Gentile, we are one nation under God. The black and white, we are one nation indivisible. That Republican and Democrat, we are all Americans. Tonight, with heart and hand, through whatever trial and travail, we pledge ourselves to each other and to the cause of human freedom, the cause that has given light to this land and hope for the world. My fellow Americans, we're known around the world as a confident and a happy people. Tonight, there's much to celebrate and many blessings to be grateful for. So while it's good to talk about serious things, it's just as important and just as American to have some fun. Now, let's have some fun. Let the celebration begin.
How's it going, everybody? Are you hot? It's supposed to be hot. It's the 4th of July. Happy 4th of July, everybody. On behalf of the entire Obama family, welcome to the White House. Now, the last thing anybody wants to do is to ruin a nice backyard barbecue with a long speech. So I'm going to be quick. It is always such an honor for us to spend this holiday with members of our military and your extraordinary families. You know, all of you represent what's best in America. You serve under our proud flag. You and your families sacrifice more than most of us can ever know, all in defense of those God-given rights that were first put to paper 236 years ago. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So as your commander-in-chief, but also as an American, I want to invite all of you over to say one thing. Thank you. Today, all across America, at schools and beaches and in town squares, Americans are celebrating the freedoms that all of you and your families defend. Like many of them, we're grilling in the backyard. We've got some pretty good tunes for you. We've got the outstanding Marine Band. Give them a big round of applause. And we've got Brad Paisley and his band in the house for a little country. We've also got all of you. We've got Army in the house. We've got Navy. We've got Air Force. You know we've got some Marines here. And we've got Coast Guard. Today we salute all of you. We salute our soldiers like Sergeant Alan Reese, who in the midst of an enemy ambush in Afghanistan risked his own life to save the lives of four others. We salute our sailors like Petty Officer Taylor Morris, who suffered terrible wounds while serving in Afghanistan on an explosive ordnance disposal team, but who inspires us all through his incredible recovery. We salute an airman, Colonel Charles Barnett, who led close to 200 combat missions in Afghanistan and still serves his country by volunteering to care for our fallen heroes at Arlington National Cemetery. We salute a Marine, Corporal Alex Nguyen, who sustained serious injuries when his vehicle struck an IED in Afghanistan, but who carries on stronger than ever. We salute a Coastie from my hometown of Chicago, Lieutenant Commander Michelle Watson, who was one of the first African-American women to graduate from the Coast Guard Academy and went on to perform exceptional service in Operation Enduring Freedom. All the men and women who stand with us here this afternoon are an example of this generation of heroes, this 9/11 generation that has earned its place in history alongside the greatest generations. Because of your service and sacrifice, all of our troops are now out of Iraq. Because of your service and sacrifice, we took the fight to Al-Qaeda and we brought Osama bin Laden to justice. Because of your service and sacrifice, we're transitioning out of Afghanistan. We remain ready for any threat. That is all because of you. And as long as I have the honor of being your commander-in-chief, I want you all our men and women in uniform, our veterans, and their families to know this: America will always remember. We will always be there for you, just as you've been there for us. That's my promise. That is America's promise. And that is one that we pledge to fulfill on this Independence Day. So happy 4th of July, everybody. Enjoy the fireworks. Get some hot dogs. God bless you. God bless your families. And God bless these United States of America. And with that, let me turn back over to the United States Marine Band.
Hello, America. I have no idea how important my story is to America, but I am sure how important America is to me. I am of modest means, no educational degree, and have nothing notable worth claiming except one. I am a real American. I cannot separate my story from our American story, for my predecessors go back hundreds of years before either of us were born onto this unique part of the earth we call America today. My ancestors embraced this ancient, magical land of ideals and dreams, blurring the lines between native and immigrant. After hundreds of years had passed, the people living here embraced and proclaimed the American spirit. At that time, my relatives gripped their historical opportunity and fought for a new kind of freedom, establishing a revolutionary form of equality new to the world then and rare today. To describe how democracy affected my life seems impossible to me, for democracy is my way of life. My name is Joycea Fire-Rose, and I'm a 16th generation American. Every flavor, native and international, has found its way into my DNA woodpile. Local and world ingredients cooked in this melting pot long before I was born in this hearty stew we call America today. I am American, and Independence Day is my ethnic holiday. I know I am not unique, but I am uniquely American. So I ask everyone, can you feel it? Can you hear it? Can you see it? I am able to respond. I must. I am an American, and I cannot ignore the historical opportunity before me today. I see, I hear, and I know. I am able to respond. I must. I am an American, and I cannot ignore my historical opportunity before me today. And for the sake of all Americans and to propel our national healing even further, I'll step forward to admit the real truth for everyone. I am ashamed how America no longer seems to be the nation my ancestors fought and died for. Something must have been in the fruit punch at the turn of the last century, for this nation has seemed to suffer from a doozy of a hangover ever since. But worst of all, too many people believe America has lost her magic. This is our historical time, America. We control our nation's future today. I remind everyone, their spirits make America great. Keep your courage, for there are reasons this land is called the home of the brave. Find your faith, for our values and ideals are what keep this land free. And most of all, Americans, do not despair, for despite appearances, no one walks alone. The American spirit shadows each of us, granting each a unique power, and we each choose to respond or not. For over 200 years, our American language and our Constitution connected all American citizens. If our language, our Constitution, and our citizens are severely compromised today, then what connects us tomorrow? Some chose this tremendous blessing of American citizenship. Some were born with this glorious opportunity in hand. Wake up, America, and embrace our greatest strength. You cannot recognize an American by appearances. You cannot recognize an American by the accent of their speech, the color of their eyes, or the shade of their skin. You cannot recognize an American by their religion, profession, residence, or spouse. No one can tell me the status of someone's citizenship by their appearance. The only way to recognize a real American is by the quality of that person's character. The hallmark of a real American citizen became established long before any of us were born and seems to have been forgotten. So I remind everyone, it is the strength of a person's character which defines a real American. It's time for all citizens to stand up and be real Americans. A real American embraces their spirit, and thus the American spirit embodies them. That is a magical it which makes America great. the individual gritty determination emboldened by the courage of truth and built on the foundation of honest labor. When united, America regains her spirit, her strength, and most importantly, her moral compass. Have the courage to face yourself in the mirror. Ask yourself what choices are before you and choose to make a difference. Make a difference every day, and especially by voting on Election Day, because a real American always makes a difference.
Picture this. A group of politicians from the 13 American colonies come together in this building, right here, to plot what turns out to be a revolution. A contentious Continental Congress needs to set forth some convincing reasons for declaring war. Congress turns to a brilliant 33-year-old aristocrat from Virginia, Thomas Jefferson. In a matter of days, the red-haired wonder writes one of the most celebrated manifestos for human freedom and self-government in the history of Western civilization. The Continental Congress authorizes Philadelphia printer John Dunlap to print 200 broadsides, poster-sized sheets. The document, unsigned, is then rushed to waiting horsemen who put it in their saddlebags and gallop throughout the colonies. See, if this Revolutionary War is to be won, thousands of farmers and tradesmen must be persuaded to take up arms and fight. And they do. Not many people realize it today, but scholars believe Jefferson intended for the Declaration to be performed, not just read. Its words and rhythms were written to be spoken in proud and defiant tones in grand public places. It's a safe bet that the Continental Congress never had in mind a performer like me. That is to say, a black man. Thomas Jefferson was not ignorant of the problem of slavery, of course. He called it a moral and political depravity, and in the original draft of the Declaration denounced the slave trade as a cruel war against human nature itself. But Congress thought better of this particular item and deleted it. In fact, there is no mention of slavery or black people or of women, for that matter, in this preeminent statement on the equal rights of man. So it makes you wonder, how could a man who himself held slaves write with such incredible passion and eloquence about human liberation and the promise of a democratic republic? Why, some may ask, do I bring up such embarrassing truths on this glorious occasion? I answer, the real glory of the Declaration of Independence has been our nation's epic struggle throughout history to close the gap between the ideals of this remarkable document and the sometimes painful realities of American life. The Declaration symbolizes the birth of our nation, of course, but also the constant struggle to achieve its ideals. Consider, the words of this document inspired the French Revolution in 1789. 200 years later, the revolt of Chinese students in Tiananmen Square. It inspired Abraham Lincoln to issue the Emancipation Proclamation, Martin Luther King Jr. to fight for civil rights, and women's suffragettes to fight for the vote. This business of fulfilling the Declaration of Independence is a difficult struggle, but it is also an ennobling struggle. Jefferson called the Declaration an expression of the American mind. It is why this nation is so great and why I am so proud to be an American. Here now are those sentiments as first expressed in this very place.
When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them.
A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government.
Laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness.
Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes.
And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed.
But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security.
Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government.
The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states.
To prove this, let that be submitted to a candid world.
He has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good.
He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them.
He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable only to tyrants.
He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures.
He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people.
He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within.
He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land.
He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers.
He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries.
He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance.
He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislature.
He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power.
He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation.
For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us.
For protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states.
For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent.
For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses.
For abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies.
For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments,
for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever.
He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us.
He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people.
He is, at this time, transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy of the head of a civilized nation.
He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands.
He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions.
In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people.
Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us.
We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here.
We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity.
And we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence.
They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends.
We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled,
appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare
that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be free and independent states.
That they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown.
And that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved.
And that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce,
and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do.
And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence,
we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
That was an interesting history lesson. I enjoy history, but I don't know, American history just speaks to my heart in a different way than like world history. But that was really interesting. We're going to open up the mics now, and you all can comment or if you have any questions. First, we're going to hear from Blog Talk Mom.
Well, thank you, Sister Starla. And while Bill, I tell you, this was really good. It was just excellent to hear the president and that lady. I don't ever remember
hearing.
Yes,
I really enjoyed that.
Oh, I heard something in that I guess, that I just never have thought of America. I mean, like, you don't gauge a Christian by where they live or what color of skin or, you know, it's by who they are, if they really are, you know, if they have that. And so an American is an American, someone that has that character that gave that name in the first place. That was just excellent. I know it took a lot of work for you and Wild Bill to put that together, And I definitely appreciate every part of it.
Well, while Bill does most of the work, I just do the intro.
Well, you do your voice and pulling it together, and I know that it just wouldn't work without you, so we just give you great.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes. And I do appreciate that, and I hope others would comment. And I know they were touched by it, and this would be an excellent one to go back into the archives and hear it again, or share it with someone that maybe couldn't hear it at this time of the night. It was very, very good. The presidents, how they spoke, and how you could hear more, you know, in a history class at school. I'm not sure I was awake.
Hopefully. Yeah.
The history was not my best subject. It's sort of, you almost have to have a special way of thinking. Today it was real interesting. I was at my pastor's house, and this little boy's in the third grade, and he was looking at, we were looking at pictures, and it was a generation before, and so pastor was showing me a picture of her sister's daughter, and she looks just like one of the little girls in church. So I asked Luke, I said, who is that? And he said it was that little girl in church, and he said, no, that's Sister Doris. And in his mind, he could not figure out how Doris, who is old, could be in that picture. You know, it just, you could just, he could not figure it out. He said, she can't, that can't be. And so it's hard for us, don't you think, sometimes to think what really happened in a generation before us. You know, we hear about it, sing about it, but really to comprehend, this is our country. This is how our country came about. This is the history that we need to retain and remember and be thankful, be very grateful for. So that was a little illustration. And I think in my history class, I just knew I had certain things I had to memorize and put together and pass the test, but I'm not sure that it ever clicked what I was learning, you know, what history, what it really meant. And that's another thing about growing older. You do appreciate we had a sermon the other day about passing the baton, and when a person is passing a baton in a real race, the person that's going to receive the baton has to be running. Now, they got to be going already. And so this next generation and your generation and then the little children, they've got to have a good foundation and an understanding and an appreciation and be ready to, like the lady spoke about, to have that kind of character that truly makes us an American. Sister Kaiser would have called, but they're having a service tonight, so hope others did.
Well, I always thought it was fascinating about the fact that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died the same day, a few hours apart, 50 years to the day after the signing of independence. I mean, what is the likelihood of that? I just thought that had to be God. I don't know.
Some connection.
Such a coincidence.
Yeah, I don't think that could possibly have been a coincidence. And then one of our presidents was born on the 4th of July. So it's for sure making that day significant, huh?
Really? Who was the president?
I think it was, I'm not good at remembering presidents' names, but when you talk to someone else, I'll see if I can I can find it, because it was, I was going to write some of it down.
You can Google it.
What?
I Google everything.
Yeah, so. And sometimes I'm embarrassed. Everything I want to do it's almost, you don't have to go to a book, you don't have to go to a library, it's just right there, all the data.
Yeah.
And, Wikipedia is, I think, my favorite. To look up more details about it, but I don't see it on here. Maybe someone listening knows who that would be. We'll call. And
do we have any history facts?
Yeah, we need some. Come on. share with
us? Oh, we have Wild Bill.
Okay.
Maybe Wild Bill knows. So, do you know the answer to the question?
Couldn't hear the question.
Oh.
We're
the wondering, there was a president born on the 4th of July. We were talking about the coincidence, well, if it was a coincidence, of Thomas Jefferson and John Adams being or dying on the same day, hours apart, 50 years after the signing of independence. So, do you know of a president that was born on the 4th of July?
Yeah, I when we were talking about this, I'm trying to think who it was. I'm wanting to say I think it was
Hoover. Yeah, you're
right. Calvin Coolidge, maybe.
There was
two presidents that were born on the 4th of July and two presidents that died on the 4th of July, but the two that died, as you just said, they died within hours of each other and were both, you know, right there. One was the editor and one was the one that wrote the Declaration of Independence. All I can say is I'm glad to be an American. And sometimes I think we forget what we have here compared to what other countries have. And we have a right to, you know, use our soundbite mentality and pick people apart and look for the negative and everything. There's other countries that did that, and they end up disappearing. You know, you never hear from them again. There's places where if you have a Bible, you can end up in prison. Never heard from again. There's places where you say the name of Jesus, you can end up in prison. You know, there's places where people were beaten and crucified for the gospel. And we live in a place where there's a lot of changes going on. I'm not pleased with all of them, but we still live with the most freedom of any other country in the world. And I'm so proud and happy to be a part of that. And I don't want to ever take away not thinking and acknowledging that it was bloodshed that paid for that. It was men standing up, putting down their farm implement, getting their hunting rifles. They weren't soldiers and did a job that had to be done. And then as wars came after that, we've had people all through history that have stood for freedom, not just in this country, but for freedom for others that are oppressed. And even though we don't like the ideal of our young men and women having to make the ultimate sacrifice for things that are going on in other countries, when we stop and realize that our concept of ideal from what was in this document is and that all men are created equal under God and should have the right to the pursuit of happiness and a better life, and someone has to be willing to stand in the gap to show that this, we don't just believe this for the people who live here, but we believe this for people all over the world. And it's not popular at times. It's not fun. It's one of those things that comes with great cost to our nation. But we either are who we say we are or we're not. And those actors, when I found that clip of all those different actors, I started to have a contest at the beginning to see if people could name who they were, because I was amazed as who had got together to do this, where they actually read the Declaration of Independence. When you stop and realize all the things that they were facing, there were only 13 colonies, and they were going against the greatest nation that existed at that time. Because freedom was important. And freedom is still just as important today. And as we've said many times, wow, you know, freedom means that we have to be, you know, we have the right to shout to the top of our voice what we believe, and someone else can stand on the opposite corner and shout something that will make our blood boil at the top of their voice as to what they believe. But that is what being an American is all about.
Good.
But anyway, that's all I had to say about that. Kind of got me a noisy truck tonight, but I just I hope that something from this, because I do understand we all come from different perceptions, different places where we live, but to stop and listen to that and just come up with your own understanding. You know, we went back to 1986. You hear people talking about Ronald Reagan being the great orator as far as being a president, you know, and what he did. And here we hear from our current president, which is a black man, which I've, you know, shared before, I never thought I would see in my lifetime. Not because that I'm prejudiced, just because of the prejudice of our nation. I didn't know that we have moved to a point to allow that to happen. And how he spends his 4th of July honoring those who are served and their families, and especially those that have been injured in the conflict of what our country is involved with. And so you got different perceptions. People can say, well, you know, well, you can nitpick anything. You can make anything bad if you want to. And that's fine if that's where you want to live. You can be that kind of American. But if we stop and count our blessings and we realize that in this day and time in our country that we can still find a place and pray and reach out to God and have a personal relationship with Him without any fear of retribution, without any fear that we're violating any laws of our nation, that should have great value. Because with you think things are changing a lot here, if we were to break down what's changed in other countries, I think you would be blown away. The only other countries that are more extreme that have not changed is the ones where it's illegal for women to vote, illegal for women to speak. If a woman commits adultery, she's stoned. Women can't drive cars. They have to be pretty much covered in a tent when they walk out their doors. They're totally submissive in every way to whatever a man tells her to do. You know, those countries are not making a lot of change. But look at the brutality of how they live and how certain people have no rights. We've seen how they don't have a problem with coming up with weapons of mass destruction, and they test it on their own people, on the population of the ones they do not agree with a lot, either for religious belief or because they just that one sect of who they are in their tribe, you know, they just go out there and wipe them out. And when you stop and look at things as the world, we have not went near as far down the rabbit path as we think we have. They're still good in this country. And as I've said many times, what you see in Washington is a mirror of the people of this country, whether we like it or not. The majority of the people is what we see mirrored in our government today. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. So, anyway, I do hope everyone enjoyed the show. And I did want to say, you know, we had a speaker last week that shared about a book, talked about a spiritual warfare in his life. He's going to be back with us next week, as far as I know. And I just pray that everyone has a safe and happy 4th of July, and that they just stop and take a moment to, if you see a military person or law enforcement, firefighter, these people make sacrifice so that we can all feel safe. And they deserve our respect for what they do, maybe not as a person, but, you know, we should be able to separate from the two. So that's all I have to say. Did y'all have anything else? I was really hoping to get more comments tonight. So
you covered it so beautifully and in such depth, and I'm sure that you will hear from people in the archives. It was an excellent program. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, I am so glad. The song was a little long at the beginning, but I wanted to cover so many different areas to set the tone for people to think about, you know, our country. There's so many foundations that were established, you know, with the words "under God" and the word "God" in it. You know, most of our historical monuments and speeches have things to do with God. And I don't know if I said it, but it was amazing to me. The Battle Hymn of the Republic was, you know, was sung during the Civil War, and it started in the North, but it actually became a song that was sang by both sides. And I thought that was really, really interesting too, how that even though people were on a different side of a battle, and even though they were all American, you know, they were a lot closer than they were further apart. You know, just minor issues is what caused this war, which, you know, there's different people that argue what it was. I think greed was the bottom line over it then, just like a lot of things now. But
right, greed.
That could be a whole other show in itself.
That's true. I like that part where all men are created equal. That sort of, that creation idea with a creator, I find divine design. And then
I wish you could have seen the video of the actors. There's an actor who played an Indian in just about every movie where there's an Indian in it. He is an American Indian. And he was the one that read the thing talking about the savage Indian, how that the British were mistreating them. You know, the Americans were making friends with them at that point. And they actually helped us survive. We wouldn't have made it if it hadn't been for the help of the Indians when we first came here. A lot of people forget that. And but there was a Hispanic, there was an Asian person on there, a couple of black people. I think there was a Cuban person that was an actor that was involved with that reading. And then, you know, I don't know, the way they did that, it just, it really spoke. Well, for one thing, they're fantastic performers. And if you watch the video, you could see that most of them had actually memorized the whole thing. They could have just spoken. And I thought, wow, that's a dedication to do something here for a historical thing and to be that dedicated to the purpose of it. So, did you name any of the people that was in there, Starla?
Wait.
I'm sorry?
Did you recognize any of the voices?
I didn't either.
I'm really bad at names. I mean, I can picture them, but I can't.
I know Winona Ryder was in here. Kathy Bates was in it. The guy that recently had cancer, I can't think of his name.
Michael Douglas.
Yes, he was in there. The guy that did the Braveheart movie and the Civil War movie, the movie about
Mel
Jesus.
Mel Gibson,
he was in there. There was a lot of big name people. Whoopi Goldberg. Anyway, I was curious when I was doing it. I thought, wow, I can't believe these people got together to do this. So, anyway, you started to say something here, Blog Talk Mom.
Well, I was going to mention when I was homeschooling this past semester, we looked up on YouTube, we looked up the 13 colonies, and there is some tremendous information on there about how France helped us. It was just unbelievable how they came to our rescue in certain situations, and then we got the Statue of Liberty. You know, the connection there, how they gave it as a gift, and just so many things about it. The details of it, I would. In fact, now you've got me stirred up. I'm going to go back and go through it again because it was so interesting. And then
But then the bad thing was we started off with the French helping us at one point, and then we had the French-American War, you know, during that time. It was so interesting how alliances could shift. I think everybody saw us as being new, and all of a sudden they saw the great wealth possibilities for this nation, and still there were people that wanted to take over us. I think that was part of it. You know, they wanted to control different aspects of the imports and exports to this country.
And we almost,
import and export then was not quite the same as what it is now.
But everybody fighting for their own rights, which is a good, healthy thing on one respect, but it was a miracle of God that after the United States received its independence that they could begin to work and pull together and become the nation that it is. And you're right. I mean, we are very, very blessed. Just leaving, of course, where I came into the country from being in, I wasn't in Alaska, which is very beautiful, and so is Northwest Territory of Canada as far as ice. But when all you see is white and ice, you know, just ice. And then when I came back, we flew into the United States, and I saw the flowers. I was just almost overwhelmed by the beauty of America. It is just a beautiful country and so prosperous. When you go to a hamlet where there's almost nothing, there's just isolation, and you realize that's not just one spot. There's a lot in our country, but here it's just everywhere you turn, the abundance of food, the abundance of clothing, the abundance of entertainment. Everything is in abundance in our country. And I know on the
Ray Charles, how he sang.
Yeah. And there are those that are less fortunate, but there are ways that they can be helped. And I love our country.
Well, we lost Wild Bill, but I'm with you. I really do love our country, and I am a proud American.
Proud to be an American. Well, thank you again, both of you working and putting this together for us, and we do appreciate it, and we appreciate the program from week to week. It's very inspiring, and I look forward to the gentleman that will be here next week. He was in for Jane. Was it, wasn't that her name? That was the...
Yes, Jane Boland.
Yep. Yeah, Jane, but she was very, very good. And I would just hope you all have a wonderful 4th of July.
Well, you too. And we want to thank all of our listeners for listening tonight, and we do want to wish everybody a happy 4th of July, and be safe, and we'll see you here next week at your place. Good night.